I've been around the world, and every place I've been ain't quite.
Great music coming in from the that will be on display at the Fresh Grass Festival at Mass Mocha this weekend. We'll be talking that event later on in the show. Welcome back. It is our roundtable panel for this Wednesday morning, and we are delighted to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. If you would like to attach yourself to some sort of electronic device and email us, we would love to read what you have on your mind. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will have attendance in just a moment, but before we do that, we will check in on our lockbox, because our lockbox is in full operation. It is there just waiting for it to be filled, and we have a lot on the line, so I will turn it over to Alan to fully explain.
Not fully, because I don't know what I'm talking about, but I can tell you it's not as good as we'd like. You know, I've always been a great believer that we share. One of the when I talk to other public radio stations about how they can do what we do, and they ask me to come, I always tell them, make sure the phones are in the same room with the people who are talking, you know, Joe and Selma, Joe's, and they always say to me, but what if the phones don't ring? I say, aha, then everybody's in it together. And everybody's in it together. We've raised about $160,000. We'll get a full update later. But we need $300,000 by the time we get there. If we don't, we're going to be in real trouble. It's that simple.
And just to interrupt for a second, but we need that by the start of the fund drive, which is October 6th, $300,000. Right. And what's on the line?
What's on the line is an updated control room. Right now, we're in real trouble. People are driving around in Priuses and brand new cars are hearing stutters and things of that kind. We have to put a stop to all of that. We have to bring ourselves up to absolutely, pristine work, which is what everybody expects of us and what they deserve. So everybody, go to the lockbox, WAMC.org, put something in. I was just talking to Howie Hawkins, who's running on the Green Party. He said he has as many donors as Andrew Cuomo does, but they give him about no. They have a lot of donors, but he gets $7,000 is the average thing for Cuomo, and you know about, I think $7 or something like that is for Howie Hawkins. Just put something in. That's all that counts. If that happens, we can't lose.
And then there's a challenge.
There's a $25,000 challenge from the. Glad you mentioned it. $25,000 from the Lennox Foundation, LENNOX, who are saying, if you can do this, the $200,000, which will bring us to $300,000 before the beginning of the fund drive in the lockbox, if you can do that, we'll give you $25,000. Well, it's a tough match, and it's going to be tough to do, which is why everybody has to do something. You know, we're one of the most listened to public radio stations in the United States of America. I don't know if you know that. We just saw some data, which was just incredible, knocked our eyes out. I think we were number one in some categories. Incredible. There's enough people. It's just a matter of will. Do we want what we have? And will everybody do something? And remember, we love you.
Remember that we love you, and that we will, as Alan mentioned, give a update in at the end of the hour this morning and tell you where we are. But it's WAMC.org, and you can just click on the lockbox, and it is very easy to find, so you won't have any issues with that. WAMC.org, if you'd like to be part of our conversation, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel to you. Of course, Alan Chartok is here. Political consultant Libby Post joins us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe.
And all University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here.
Good morning.
It is great to have you. So let us begin. There's a lot to talk about today, both here and abroad. Let's begin with a story from the U.S. general who is President Obama's top military advisor, who said Tuesday that he would recommend deploying U.S. forces in ground operations against Islamic extremists in Iraq if airstrikes proved insufficient, opening the door to a riskier, more expansive American combat role than the president has publicly outlined. Martin Dempsey, the General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told the Senate Armed Services Committee that while he was confident that an American-led coalition would defeat the Islamic State, he would not foreclose the possibility of asking Mr. Obama to send American troops to fight the militants on the ground, something Mr. Obama has ruled out. I think we talked about this when the president spoke last Wednesday, and the one thing that struck me was that he was emphatic on that point, and my initial reaction, I believe, when I talked back to the television set was, never say never, right? So,
You think Dempsey is going to the Congress and giving words that are not somehow cleared with the White House? I mean,
I'm curious as to why the president was so emphatic when I think to most people it appeared that was always in the realm of possibility.
Well, it is. It's the same slippery slope we have seen every time. We saw it in Vietnam. We have seen it again and again. First, there's an insult to us in some way. Then we're going to send advisors. Then we're going to send people to protect the embassy. Then we're going to have a lot of troops on the ground. So do I think that this is a slippery slope? I do. And I think it's probably the way that we're headed. Rosemary, what do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a political component, which is Obama, and a military component, which is Dempsey. Dempsey outlined what is routine military procedure. You don't limit your possibilities before you go in there. That's why we have the wonderful Constitution we do. Obama gets to decide.
I just saw this as sort of more on the realm of somebody put the talking points down the toilet and said what he wanted to say, and that it's, from my perspective, it was more of a, we wear the uniforms, we're the ones who have fought, we know what the real thing is. Mm-hmm. And it sort of, yes, flies in the face of the commander-in-chief and all the rest of it. But I don't think the military has really ever given him the respect that he deserves as commander-in-chief. Mm.
Also, let me just be very surfacey for a moment, but Dempsey looks like a general, doesn't he? I mean, if you went to Central Casting for a guy who looks like a general.
Yeah, and Hagel looks like, the defense minister or the CIA chief. Yeah. But
I don't watch television, so I don't know.
Yeah, I just think there's something more afoot here in terms of, he's lame duck. We can really do what we're going to say, what we think we should say, regardless if he wants, because Josh Earnest was caught totally off guard in the press briefing following it. It was like, we could think, yes, it was all Machiavellian, but if that was the case, then there would have been a little more of a nuanced response.
The White House insisted on Tuesday that Mr. Obama was not shifting his policy and that General Dempsey was not out of sync with his commander-in-chief.
Yeah,
so
right. The questions that he was answering were theoretical. Could it lead? And as a military person, honestly, he could not say, oh, we'll definitely get it with. I mean, look at our own history in the Middle East. He could not say that. I'm thinking back to your comment about whether Obama got the respect he deserved. I'm not so sure I agree with it. Petraeus gave him respect. He was recognized for his kind of much more realistic policy in both Afghanistan and in Iraq than Bush. So I don't know if that's true. I think there's always tension between the commander-in-chief, the White House, and the military.
But, the fact of the matter is the president was very clear about no boots on the ground.
Right.
That is the main talking point of this whole thing in gathering support from the people. Our boys and girls aren't going to go put boots on the ground and get killed.
Go look at FDR and what he said about going into the Second World War, or Woodrow Wilson about going into the First World War. We're watching
the Roosevelts, aren't we?
But presidents do that. They put their fingers up in the air. They see which way the wind is blowing, and they know how fast they can go. I don't know, had the Japanese not invaded Pearl Harbor, how long it would have taken.
I think it would have taken a lot longer.
Yeah.
So, but be that as it may, that's my take.
When you have something like this, though, back to the politics of this, with the president just last week saying, "This is our intention; these are the talking points," it seemed all along. I guess this is my ultimate question: why have that be your talking point when it's not a realistic talking point?
Well, it's spin. you know, you spin it in a way. So if this is really not the talking point and they really do want to put boots on the ground, you spin it in a way to be able to bolster Obama's foreign policy cred and his credibility with the country. But I, you know, I still don't think that that's where he wants to go. He voted against the war in Iraq. He wanted us out of Iraq and Afghanistan. I think he's reluctant, but knows we need to do something.
Oh, I agree with that. I think he is reluctant.
I think he's hoping that the airstrikes will work. Yeah. He has no really good solutions. We already know this. Any place in Syria or in that Iraq mess. And he's hoping this will work. He has to do something.
So it's kind of like give it a shot mentality.
Yeah. I believe that's it, yes. Yep.
Now, what do you think?
Well, I sort of said what I think. I think that what's going to happen here is that events will lead Obama. In other words, I think there's got to be a reaction. The further they go, look, the ISIS or ICE or IS or T for, you know, thugs, will continue to do outrageous things. And as the old folk song goes, it was all about the battleship of Maine. You know, it goes down and then there's a reaction in TR and the rest of it that that we have seen. So if this continues, the American people and their some of the warmongers in the Senate are going to say, you know, he's not going fast enough. And people are going to say, yeah, he's not going fast enough. And there'll be a reaction. They'll be burning the midnight oil at the White House and they'll come up with a reaction that might be unsatisfactory.
That's what's so bizarre about this. You have the warmongers in the Senate and even the House who are saying, no, we're not going to vote for you to be able to do this because we want you to do more. It's so bizarre that, you know, he's trying to take a moderate,
thoughtful position,
one that doesn't get us mired down and yet, you know, one that could be the first step towards something, yes. But let's see if this works. And these folks in the Republicans are like, no, we're not going to vote for it. You know, there might not be enough support on both sides, on the left and the right, to be able to get this bill through.
Mike says, why isn't Saudi Arabia sending troops to fight ISIS? Seems to me that they face a greater threat from it than we do. Who knows? The answer to that is who knows? They have always played at both sides against the middle, and they will continue to do that.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and move on to other topics, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Harrington's Lumber, Millwork, and Building Supplies, offering Made in America energy-efficient Integrity Wood Ultrex double-hung replacement windows from Marvin. We share your passion. Harrington's.com. Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield. Offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs, SteveLewisSubaru.com. And Bridgeside Grill, Sunderland Center, Massachusetts, offering lunch and dinner daily and brunch on weekends, featuring seasonal outdoor dining, member of CISA since 2007. BridgesideGrill.com for menu.
Well, I'm hanging up my heart in the lights in the bunkhouse. I don't want to be wounded by the wrong kind of love. No more rodeo dancing. No more howling at the moonlight. I'm gonna give them up. And I'm hanging up my heart late in the night. Been working every day to keep you satisfied. It just ain't right.
Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Hearing great music this morning again. Just a little preview of the Fresh Grass Festival coming to Massmoka this weekend. We are going to go to some more mail, and then we'll check in on some other stories. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Okay, so Joe says this was a distraction. The Gulf States support for ISIS needs to have a Senate hearing. Graham and McCain won't vote to raise taxes to pay for the war they want. As you know, there is this new threat of a government shutdown, and that while they might support the war, they will not vote for the money unless it's tied to other problems, other expenditures.
They have to cut elsewhere to pay for more.
Right.
So don't get your Social Security because we're fighting ISIS. Nice.
Well, it'll force more young black men into the army.
Charming.
That's exactly it.
Let us, well, we only have about a minute left, so we'll real quick go over the, where do I want to go here? I guess when it comes to the issues of the support of what the next step is, and I'm sort of unclear as to, we're gaining the support, we're bringing this coalition together, and I guess to your point, Rosemary, at what point are we, the timeline that we're looking for where we say, okay, the airstrikes are or are not working?
I don't think there is a deadline. I think they're going to look for any signs of
improvement.
Progress or improvement and say, oh, look, it's working, it's working. This is up to the White House.
And not solely.
Unless there's a massive death of Americans, and I'm not sure that can happen because we've gotten most of them.
Well, you know, they shut down a Syrian plane. Let's see what happens if they shoot down an American.
Yeah. Right.
That's
exactly
it.
I think the other thing we need to do is figure out how to shut down their black market oil sales.
Yeah, the money.
Because they're being funded by that, and if they can figure out a way to shut that down, that will strain them for resources.
Well, I'm sure they're working on it, number one. Yeah. I'm sure they're working on it, but I don't know that it is really the answer. I mean, I think it's all gravy, as we say, for ISIS to get that money. As you know, they're selling it at very cheap and reduced prices. The Turks could solve the problem real fast for us.
By
closing that border.
Okay.
That's where it is.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and talk about many other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back.
Hey, it's time to let it go. If you think you can make a difference and the fire is in your soul,
go ahead and take your stand. And
if you can't, then let it go. Yeah, just let it go. If the path that you've been making ain't the one you want to be taking.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. And we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. And if you simply just email us, roundtable at WAMC.org, that is where we get mail like this.
Yeah, like this. Stephen says, since no one on the panel will call Libby on the carpet.
For her statement,
she suggested Republicans in Congress force one more young black man into the military. I'd like to ask her to explain exactly what she means by that. We do have an all-volunteer military. Libby.
Yes, we do have an all-volunteer military, but when you cut education funding for public education, you cut what people call entitlements, and I call lifeblood, the ability to have food on the table and be able to get health care and shelter. One of the only options is for young men of color, not just blacks, but Hispanics, all young men of color. One of the ways out of that cycle of poverty is to join the Army. And if you look at the demographics of the Army, it's more and more young men and women of color.
Which fits in very nicely with the need to recruit. Because what happens is that if you recruit or if you draft, we don't have a draft anymore, but if you were to draft young middle-class people, you would certainly have much more of what we had in Vietnam. There would be that kind of protest, and they know it.
Yeah, there's some thought among policymakers that a draft would not be an entirely bad thing because it would get the interest of middle class and upper class people who have more voice in government and participate more in government.
I think Charlie Rangel has always said that.
Yeah. I mean,
it's horrible, and I'm so grateful my son's never had to go into the military. But you can see why we kind of tune out on these things. You just said it here, Libby. If my son isn't killed, what do I care?
Right.
That's
the other thing is that it's, yeah, you know, it's not
well,
just
wait a second.
Young.
I'm so sorry. I just got to stop because I know one guy is going to write us a letter about what Rosemary just said. It's not that Libby was endorsing. She was saying that this is the thread of thought that somehow happens. Because I know this guy who takes everything literally and doesn't have the mind to be able to figure that out.
I don't think any of us are actually advocating a draft.
Absolutely.
I'm not ready for that step. But there is a very logical train of thought on why it was better for the policy making than what we have now.
And it's not just, I mean, it is overwhelmingly young men of color, but also poor white men.
Right.
And
sure.
women,
right.
you know, who this
we
is
have
their
fewer
only
options.
This is the option, and in you know you can work really hard if you're a kid of color, and work really hard and get a scholarship, go to school, and get out. You can join a gang, and not get out, but be more financially stable, or you can go into the army. I mean, there's not a lot of choices because of the way we've set up this structure where people who are poor are cyclically poor. There's a cycle of poverty, and it's very difficult for people to get out of that cycle of poverty because of the way we have structured our society. Mm. It's just that simple.
I subscribe to what you've just said.
We always welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk for a moment about the NFL. Wow. Talk about a lot of news. So just the bullet points here. One is that this all started, well, the latest round here started with the Ray Rice domestic abuse case, and the tape and the NFL came under a lot of fire for what they, for their initial lack of attention to this issue, and then an indefinite suspension, and then what did they know and when did they know it? Then comes over the weekend the Adrian Peterson issue, which is brings up a child abuse in which he was had child abuse charges leveled against him for beating his 4-year-old son
with a switch.
With a switch, and then there were some cultural issues there brought into question. The Vikings, the team that Adrian Peterson plays for, the team that lost, I believe, was blown out by the New England Patriots on Sunday. I'm sure that has nothing to do with this. On Monday, said that they would reinstate him for their game against the New Orleans Saints. The outcry then was incredible. Here's just an example. Sponsors for both, sponsors for the Vikings, including the Radisson, including Anheuser-Busch, including Nike, said, "We're not going to sponsor you anymore. We're done." Until you
did they absolutely say it, or did they just say we're concerned? So that
they
said we're not going to do it.
They pulled Nike pulled their jerseys out of the shops within that area, within that market, not completely within the NFL, but within that market. Radisson did the same thing as being the official sponsor of their housing, and Anheuser-Busch also said that they wanted their name removed from the stadium. So the Vikings then reversed their call and put Adrian Peterson back on the bench as of yesterday. Meanwhile, and also the governor of the state of Minnesota, Mark Dayton, weighed in and said that that he should be suspended by the team. They called him an embarrassment. And then all of this goes to Washington, where there are now lawmakers who say, why should the NFL be a nonprofit entity? Yes. And that is being brought into question as well.
An excellent question.
Right.
Really actually unrelated to sexual assault or domestic abuse cases.
Right.
A very good question.
I mean,
so,
imagine the tax revenue we would actually get
in
this country.
Oh, my gosh. It's like GE not paying taxes.
Right.
The NFL is not paying.
They'd find a way. They'd go and, incorporate in Delaware or offshore.
Well, interestingly, Forbes did an analysis.
Moved to France, and then they
moved to the NFL in France. Forbes did a analysis of their 990 form, which is what nonprofits file, and said they wouldn't have paid taxes, that they would actually showed a loss for last year. So I really would like to look at those papers.
I can't imagine.
That's creative new math.
How they would have done a loss with all the money they get through endorsements
and
TV and everything else.
And that's to the point that they would be under the IRS code of 501c6. It's an industry organization.
Right.
However, they are not supposed to engage in business that's defined as carried out for profit.
Then why do you have an NFL.com?
Broadcast rights. Right. They have an entire TV network. They have all that apparel, why are those jerseys so expensive?
Well, it's the same issue that AARP had run up against, because they were doing all
of
this
lobbying.
Member benefits
lobbying.
And the lobbying, and so does
the NFL.
So they might have a 501c3, which is what WMC
is.
They're
a 501c6.
But if they're C6, they don't pay taxes, but the contributions aren't tax deductible. You know, so you can't make a charitable contribution there, but they do have to pay taxes on all. They have to pay sales tax. They have to pay taxes on anything that they actually sell, all of that sort of stuff.
It's what they call non-business.
Right.
They don't really take donations, though. They have dues. They have a limited number of members who pay dues. So it's a sweet
setup. Big dues.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So all I can tell you is that Jamie, who wrote a long letter, which I am not going to read, too long, but the first sentence says, "Why should we care what the NFL has to say about Ray Rice? The NFL is a private business with the interest of selling controlled violence to the public. In the pursuit of that end, they have promulgated an employment model that says you have to be bigger, faster, and meaner than any other player in order to succeed. The fact that this spills over into the personal lives of players should be no surprise."
I've been saying that for a week.
Sure.
I agree,
too,
and I really think it's the court system that we ought to be looking at that overlooks or downplays abuse.
Well,
but the NFL really needs some new procedures, which I think we're going to see. It's wonderful when social pressure catches up.
See, I took her letter a different way, because there's a great article in the Times today, which is about... You're talking about, okay, all of these abuse charges, we don't want you know, the domestic abuse and child abuse and so forth, and yet we're talking about a game where there's such brutality on the field.
Well, that's up in play, too. I mean, we're looking at concussions. Women
are
far less willing to let their sons go into football and school than they used to be because of the threat of injury. Society's looking at all of this.
But we do disagree, Rosemary, on one essential point. You're saying this is the matter for the law. And I think the other three of us are saying, no. They have a responsibility.
It's a moral responsibility.
As a national.
I don't disagree with that. And I think any attention paid to domestic abuse is good. So I don't disagree to that extent. But to me, the real, real problem here is that both of these men have not been held to account by our court system.
And that's an excellent point. And do you believe that it would be easier for the NFL to engage in stronger action if the court system was stronger?
Right. They would have then a policy that you are suspended until this issue is resolved in the court. There's a charge against you, so you're out until that's settled. That would be easy.
Right. And part of the problem is the judges want to see a good football game on Sunday. And so,
Libby, I think there's something to that.
You know, I mean,
it's taken a long time to get drunk driving laws in New York for the same reason.
Well, plus we have a court system in which when you have money, you get a very good attorney and you end up beating the system. We've seen that repeatedly, and the NFL players qualify.
Ray Rice's attorneys are challenging the league's suspension based on the collective bargaining agreement.
And Libby, it makes perfect sense.
And team owners are joining them in that.
Yeah, by law, I mean, the actual reading of the law, those attorneys are right. I think they could win. Also, the cases on domestic abuse handled by the NFL up until now are not in accord with what happened to Ray Rice. He was treated differently and more severely. That's we have a wonderful court system.
Right. That should be the beginning.
It's out of balance here.
Well, the thing is, you know, they've put, Goodell said, the women. And I'm like, really? The women are going to be in charge of domestic violence policy and programming for the NFL. And I'm like, that's great that you put the women, like the binders full of women that Mitt Romney had. But I want to know, are you going to pay attention to the women? And some of these women are high-powered women who've been in domestic violence and in law and policy. But are you going to pay attention?
It's an impressive bunch, yeah.
Yeah. You're going to pay attention? Are the owners really going to put women's safety over profit?
Well, Goodell is doing everything in his power to scramble out from under this.
Well, he wants to save his job.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually spoke about it. I didn't see that he had to leave, that he's simply the victim, if you will, of this changing social awareness. But I think that's increasingly looking really bad for him.
Oh, I think
he's clueless. I think he's tone deaf on this.
I'm not sure that he's tone deaf, but he certainly is caught up in a wave of change. It's different now than it was when he came into office. And he cannot he cannot change himself fast enough.
And Tim checked in and said, "Hi, I'm so sad to hear one of your people on the panel say how grateful she was that her sons had never had to serve in the military. I am sad for her sons, who will never know the honor it is to serve your country and stand next to people who, in my case, were not quite different from my neighbors and peers in my community. As a disclaimer, I really dislike the military structure and feel the Bush presidency is the biggest foreign policy disaster in my lifetime." And that's from Tim.
I'm from Vietnam. I'm very glad my sons were not in the military. There are other ways to serve your country. And watch the Roosevelts. Teddy Roosevelt put all four of his sons into World War One because he was a crazy warmonger, and his youngest son died, and he was sorry but said, "I wouldn't have wanted any other way. I don't feel the same."
You know, it's one of those things when we were all up in arms about gays in the military, I was totally conflicted because I didn't want to fight for anybody's right to go and be in the military.
It's certainly not anti-military, but you're speaking as parents and as citizens of saying that you don't want anyone to go to war.
That's a big difference.
Right.
And also, I don't believe in this stampede we have to support the military, which actually we mean support war. You support your military by not sending them into stupid, winless battles, unwinnable battles. And we just don't see it that way. So that's it.
Yeah.
And just to get back to the NFL, not only does Roger Goodell have the whole domestic violence thing on his head now, but the whole Washington Redskins and the use of language
and
racial slurs are also. So he's getting it from both sides.
And the NFL story, and we could probably tackle for another day, pardon the pun, is becoming a big issue too because they're starting to take away the tax data. So, Alan, go for some letters, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get a lockbox update, and then you're all free to go.
Okay, so Gary says, according to the Wall Street Journal, via Sports Business Daily, the NFL has asked the three artists under consideration for the Super Bowl XLIX halftime show to contribute a portion of their post-Super Bowl tour income to the NFL or to make some other type of financial contribution. Per the report, the idea received a chilly reception from the representatives of Katy Perry, Rihanna, and Coldplay. Given the above, how can the NFL claim to be a not-for-profit?
Rihanna was just her song was just cut from.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I wonder if she's really going to be at the Super Bowl game.
They got into a whole thing that they had to pay, that they were wondering whether, because of the spotlight that the artists were given, that the artists should pay to be a part of the.
Oh, give me a break.
That was true. That was a real thing.
That's what they said.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was the real thing.
She said something you can't say on the radio back in
response. Yeah. She probably did.
So
go ahead.
Okay. So John says, just a point concerning the going in the Army conversation. Nowadays, we do, as you say, have a volunteer military, but not anyone in capital letters will be accepted. Just because one is able-bodied does not get them in. One must have a certain level of education before one is accepted into the military. The military wants individuals of certain talents, abilities, and experience, and many so-called underprivileged individuals not automatically be accepted into the Army or other branches. Thanks, and that's from John. I knew a guy who was in charge of a mental health clinic who told me some horror stories about people who were told anything to get them into the Army. People who had virtually no education at all. Eric says, many such organizations like the NFL have taxable subsidiaries. Case in point, National Geographic Society. This comes from negotiations with the IRS to determine which activities will be taxable. And Joseph says, the need to raise taxes and have a draft to ensure democracy, the will of the people to go to war will be most evident when their sons and money are at stake. Reducing taxes and borrowing to wage war in Iraq has resulted in an executive war and deficits that are constricting domestic programs. And Ryan says, in case you guys don't know, Peterson is the NLF's best running back and might have become the NFL, I'm so sorry, all-time leading rusher, which part of why this is such a big deal? Imagine having a child abuser as the best all-time running back. And Mattman says, remember Vietnam, college kids like me had deferments and other tricks to avoid service, like corporation taxation. The more you have, the easier it is to get out of a new draft. Remember Vietnam's draft lottery? I drew 154. Damned low, possible 354. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get a Lockbox update from Megan Finnegan. We welcome your letters as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Pioneer Post and Beam, a non-kit post and beam builder in Belchertown, Massachusetts. Designing and erecting customized barns, artist studios, garages, and additions. PioneerPostandBeam.com. Healthy Living Market and Cafe, working to support local agriculture with organic products, community outreach, and jobs, open 7 days a week at the Wilton Mall, healthylivingmarket.com. And Cultural Pittsfield, presenting Third Thursday, tomorrow beginning at 5 p.m., featuring a Walk a Mile in Her Shoes theme, part of a citywide cultural initiative, discoverpittsfield.com. Support for WAMC comes from Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York. Purchasing estate jewelry, coins, silver, period antiques, fine arts, and collections, marklawson.com. The Office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock. Orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, featuring laser and digital technologies, woodstockdentist.com. And Buttermilk Falls Spa, Milton, New York, featuring treatments using organic, natural products and offering a solar geothermal heated sauna, steam room, and pool, open daily, buttermilkspa.com.
Just call me crazy if you will. Crazy has no fear.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel, and we were talking about this at the beginning of our discussion about the lockbox and about the challenge that we have on the table for $25,000 to reach a $300,000 point in the lockbox prior to the October 6 fund drive. And with us now is Megan Finnegan to tell us where we are in all of this and what ground we need to make up.
Well, the good news is...
Go start with the good news. Always start with the good news.
The good news is we have a lot of people pledging. We've got $163,736 so far in the lockbox, so we're more than halfway to the $300,000 that we need. And we've got 19 days to go, so...
19 days. Well, you know, I'm a glass half fuller as opposed to a glass half filled person. I'm scared. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm scared. I'm worried.
It's a fascinating
look at that. And Megan is not. She says, oh, listen, you know, our WAMCers always come through. We never have to worry. You know, they'll always be there. And I say, and then my kishka's hurt, you know, from from worrying about whether we'll make this or not, because it's a great deal of money, $25,000 if we can do it. And also because it validates who we are.
Yes, it does.
Now, you have figured out how much we would need per day.
Just
to make
over
it
$7,000.
$7,000 a day.
Which means, but see, it's like the thing in the sink. We all know that when you fill up the sink and you pull out the thing, then what happens? Then what happens is you get this teensy little thing that goes around, you know,
a tornado.
And at the end, you go whoosh. That's what happens here. So we have to get going now, or we're not going to make it.
Absolutely. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And Al mentioned this earlier and mentioned it just a moment ago, but I mean, we got a $25,000 challenge.
From the Lennox Foundation. Listen, my stomach is in knots already. I just really hope that everybody understands that we're all in this together. We've made this thing together. There's just no two ways about it. We all have to get the good news and the bad news. And the good news is we can do it, and the bad news is we got to get going.
WAMC.org, Megan Finnegan. Megan Finnegan. Thank you very much for the update. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Libby, thank you very much for being here as well.
Just one note. I just saw that the Vikings have put Adrian Peterson on the exempt list. He's been barred from the team.
Oh, forever?
Until the child abuse case has been resolved.
All right. Goodell's contract has been signed.
Yeah, okay. Rosemary, we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Alan, thank you. And we'll be back after this break.